Hey there, Dr. B here with your Module 4 clarifying lecture. As usual, I'll start with the study guide, and then I'll talk about the Skinner readings, and then I will answer your questions. So this week we talked about aversives, punishers, and extinction, and it's really important to understand the difference between the two. So, or between the three, I should say. Aversives are stimuli that tend to decrease responding. They tend to act as punishers. Whereas extinction is the withdrawal of reinforcement. Seeing a lot of explanatory fictions around this, and it's very important that you understand that you can't extinguish a behavior with punishment, or they're very separate things. They're two separate things. I saw some people talk about response costs as if it were the same as a token system. It's not. Okay, response cost is anytime there is a fine, if you will, for some sort of response. So if you get pulled over and get a ticket, that's a response cost. If you get points taken away on a paper, that's a response cost. So anytime you're fined for something, a swear jar is a great example of a response cost. So anytime you get, you have reinforcers that are removed, then, and the behavior has to decrease. So if the behavior doesn't change, remember it's not punishment. So anytime you do that and behavior decreases, then you have response costs. So remember, extinction is the withdrawal of reinforcers only, okay? You cannot extinguish a behavior through punishment, okay? Extinction is extinction. A lot of people talk about planned ignoring. I don't really like this term because, number one, anytime I've ever used something very similar to it, I've never really truly ignored the person. And again, you're ignoring a person, not the behavior. And it assumes that it's going to work for all behaviors. But in fact, you can't put a behavior on extinction if you don't know what's reinforcing it. So if I use, you know, quote unquote planned ignoring, and I don't attend to a behavior, I run the risk of possibly reinforcing it. Let's say that the behavior is reinforced by negative reinforcement. Then I've actually, by withdrawing attention or withdrawing a task or withdrawing, something else, then I'm actually reinforcing the behavior, and that behavior may in fact increase. Some of you are putting in differential reinforcement procedures in with extinction. Remember that extinction can be used on its own. We typically use some sort of differential reinforcement procedure when we're extinguishing a response in a clinical sense, but extinction stands on its own. So you can use extinction by itself. You can place, you know, a behavior on extinction. Maybe you don't return texts and calls to certain people. That would be a form of extinction if the behavior bursts and then goes down. You can discontinue an intervention abruptly, and that would also be placing a behavior on extinction. Don't assume that you have to differentially reinforce another behavior. It's just good clinical practice, but it doesn't necessarily have to go with the principles of behavior analysis. Remember that behavior does not go extinct. Okay, that's not the way we talk about this. Extinction is the process, or extinguishing behavior, or a behavior has been extinguished. So it doesn't go extinct. Remember that once a behavior is in your repertoire, it cannot go away. It will be there forever. Now, if it's not reinforced, it won't be displayed very often. But once you learn something, it's in your repertoire forever, barring a traumatic brain injury or something like that. All right, let's talk a little bit about reinforcers and punishers and how they work. it really doesn't matter how much you like or dislike something or how much you think it should be a reinforcer. If it doesn't change behavior, it's not a reinforcer or a punisher. Okay, so if things don't change, you don't have either a reinforcer or a punisher. Okay, so if you give somebody ice cream every time they say hello to you and the behavior doesn't change, ice cream has not been a reinforcer. If you take away, you know, your kid's cell phone for, you know, an infraction and the behavior doesn't change, then do something else because that's not a punisher. Okay? It is important that you understand that we do not seek reinforcement. Okay? So one of my big pet peeves, so you can avoid this if you have me in 623, is attention seeking. Seeking is an explanatory fiction. Okay? We don't seek reinforcers. We contact reinforcement. We have behavior maintained by reinforcement, but we don't seek it. That's an explanatory fiction. We cannot go in and see what someone is seeking or not seeking. And in fact, most of the time, when reinforcement and punishment work, it's really not a conscious decision to go out and seek that stuff or anything like that. It just happens. It's just part of life. So this goes with the whole idea of consequence being either reinforcing or punishing. So I see people say, oh, well, there's no consequence to their behavior. And I say that if they're still doing it, there's a consequence. It's reinforcing. It's not punishing. So I really want you to change your vernacular and start saying that consequence is something either reinforcing or punishing, and not use it in the typical sense where it means punisher. The reading guide talks about self-esteem and punishment, and I was kind of surprised when I saw this, because self-esteem really is a construct. It's an explanatory fiction that we can neither measure or really observe. So I was kind of surprised to see that. And I think that's part of the reason why I'm still seeing a lot of mentalism. So, you know, this person does something because they realize they can get out of it, or they know they can, or something like that. That's an explanatory fiction, and that's not how behavior processes work. They work in kind of the sub-basement, if you will, of our responding. So we don't have to know that reinforcement is being contacted. We don't have to realize it. We don't have to be aware of it for it to be effective. Also, I'm going to say it again, reinforcement is not reward. If you're listening, say it with me. Reinforcement is not reward, okay? Reinforcement strengthens behavior. Reward is a nice thing that you give to somebody for a nice thing, okay? Remember that behaviorism doesn't make value judgments. We do not talk about things being good or bad. Society talks about things being good or bad. We talk about things either being added or removed, and whether or not behavior goes up or goes down. That's it. So if you consider us more like economists, biologists, that's probably a better way to look at behavior analysis. I like the term consequences contacted better than consequences given. I know I slipped up earlier in this clarifying lecture, but given assumes some sort of control. And most of the contingencies in our environment are controlled by the environment. They're not controlled by people. So we really contact contingencies. We don't necessarily hand them out, if that makes sense. I would also caution you to make sure that you're staying away from informal language. We do have some people on faculty who really dislike the term kiddo. So it's better to say student or client or child, because it is a little bit more professional as well. I know it's common in the field but it really, it's not as professional as it could be. You also want to stay away from things like she loves M&M's, so we use them as reinforcers. Remember that we have no way to know what somebody loves. The only person who can see love is the person themselves. We can see preference. We can see that behavior changes based upon presentation of M&M's. So those things we can say, you know, M&M's are preferred. And so you really need to stay formal in your language in these courses. You know, when you get out and you're talking to your friends, you know, talk to your friends. That's awesome. No problem with that. But when you're here, stay as formal as possible in your writing. That's really going to help you learn the terms and concepts, which somebody asked as a question. Timeout. Timeout is so controversial, but really timeout, all it is timeout from positive reinforcement. How you do it is where the controversy lies, and it's not all that surprising that people see it as about 50-50 effective, because timeout is not effective for behavior maintained by negative reinforcement. It's only effective for behavior maintained by positive reinforcement. So what do I mean? Okay, so you have an individual who's given a task that, you know, is a bit higher than their skill set. And as a result, they have a meltdown. And then that person's put into timeout. First of all, the person's put into timeout, not the behavior. So that's a problem. But put the person in timeout, well, you've just reinforced escape. So, you know, it's kind of half and half effective. It goes again to, if you're going to use punishment, if you're going to use extinction, if you're going to use timeout, if you're going to use really any behavioral intervention, you have to assess what the reinforcers are. So what's reinforcing that behavior now, and we're going to change it? Okay, that is, I just told you 623 in a nutshell, basically. So it's really important that you understand that. Things like write-ups, detention, those are considered punishers, not extinction. Okay, so remember that extinction is the removal of reinforcement. Anything else that decreases responding is most likely a punisher. Punishment can absolutely suppress other responses as well. So when you get to 622, we're going to talk about some of the side effects of extinction, reinforcement, and punishment. And one of the big side effects of punishment is that you then engage in other behaviors that are negatively reinforced. So, and those tend to be the bare minimum. So, yes, punishment absolutely can suppress other responses. And it can do all kinds of other things, too. Now, positive practice. Some of you are still confusing positive with happy. Remember, positive means to do or to add. Negative means to take away. Okay, so math. Plus sign, minus sign. Positive practice is not a happy practice. Okay, it's not something you do that makes you happy. Negative practice isn't something necessarily that makes you sad. Positive practice just means that you are practicing an alternative response. So positive practice over correction would be something like when you get your spelling words wrong and you have to write them 100 times, when you do that in grade school, that's positive practice over correction. If you're running in the hall and the PE teacher makes you walk up and down the hall 10 times, that's positive practice over correction. Okay, so you're practicing an alternative response that's more appropriate. Negative practice is where you do the inappropriate behavior over and over, and the hope, I don't know, want to say the hope because that's a it's an explanatory fiction. The way that it is supposed to work is that eventually habituation sets in, and the problem behavior decreases. Many of you who lived through the 80s, if you did, I lived through the 80s, if we were caught smoking, then we had to sit with our parents and smoke a whole carton of cigarettes. And the whole idea was that we would habituate to smoking and then the problem behavior would decrease. Pursuant to the idea that everybody's reinforcers and punishers in their repertoire are different, for some people that created a lifelong habit of smoking. And for other people, it was a very effective punisher for smoking behavior. So again, you know, these aren't universal things. I did see one with negative practice overcorrection with drinking. Because of the risk of alcohol poisoning, I would not recommend that. And I hope that nobody had to endure that as a youngster, because that could really lead to some disaster. I'm still seeing a punishment or a reinforcement. Reinforcement is not a thing. Reinforcement is a process. Same with punishment. Punishment is not a thing. Punishment is a process. And again, we reinforce behavior, we punish behavior, we don't change people. Okay, so those are really important concepts. They're going to help you learn these terms, so keep practicing them. And another thing, you know, we just talked about habituation. You can also have habituation to punishment. And so what used to be a punishing stimulus can sometimes be not as effective at that magnitude. So let's say that I yell at my dog. And that's an effective punisher for chewing the baseboards. Not that she does that. After a while, habituation sets in. And now I have to yell louder. Okay, that worked. You know, so that's negatively reinforcing to my yelling, right? But now after a while, I have to yell even louder. Now that's being negatively reinforced. And if I don't look at that that pattern, then what can happen is that, you know, then I go to holding her snout shut, and then I go to, you know, smacking her snout. And, you know, I don't do those things, by the way, but that could happen. So that's another reason why punishment is not our frontline intervention. And you'll also read a book by Bernie Sibman called Coercion and Its Fallout, where he talks about this in detail. Let's talk a little bit about your Skinner discussion. Yep, he's really tough read. I totally agree with you. But make sure that you are talking in your own words, okay? That way I can hear your mistakes and I can correct them. If you just read back what he said, then I can't correct your mistakes because I'm not hearing them. Okay, so it's important that you're making sure that you're saying these things in your own words. And I'm really only going to take points off for things like glaring errors, like reinforcing people or punishing people or using explanatory fictions, things like that. I'm not going to take points off if you get some, you know, esoteric concept incorrect. I will correct it. So that brings me to rules. Rules mean something very different to Skinner than they do in, quote unquote, the real world. Rules mean that there's some sort of verbal behavior that is maintaining your behavior. So it's a verbal discriminative stimulus. But it doesn't have to be vocal verbal. Could be vocal verbal, could be signed, could be gestures, could be a road sign would be a verbal behavior. music, math is verbal behavior. There's all kinds of different types of verbal behavior. So sometimes we think verbal, vocal, don't. Verbal means just any type of communicative behavior. I think the commands and warnings were pretty self-explanatory, although the directions and instructions, he doesn't really do a good job of distinguishing the two. And some of you said, you know, I don't see the distinction, and I tend to agree with you. I don't see the distinction either. And, you know, when he's talking about folklore, maxims, proverbs, you know, I'm sure you've all, you know, heard, you know, some tales from, you know, your ancestors that are kind of parables as to how to respond in certain situations, how to behave. And pretty much any society that has been around has come up with rhymes and proverbs to convey some concept that would be highly reinforcing if you engage in it. And the one that I kind of think of and enjoy is if you remember Schoolhouse Rock, and Schoolhouse Rock came up with these songs like Just a Bill and the one about the preamble to the Constitution. All of those are ways to convey rules, okay? Ways to convey how reinforcers will be contacted. Now, I was reading that in your Skinner stuff, things like, oh, the behavior's just conditioned, or is it an operant or learned behavior? And I want to really distinguish this. So all behavior is conditioned. Conditioned is kind of a synonym for learned, okay? And everything that we do is learned. Maybe it was learned and then it's genetic. It was learned by our ancestors. Maybe it's something that we came in contact with in our own lives. So learned behavior is an operant, okay? So anything that was learned by respondent means or by operant means is learned behavior. And my husband is cutting up onions, so you may be hearing his knife in the background here. So what is superstition? This one is interesting, and it also kind of goes along with some of the things about, you know, you talked about, you know, how do people learn racism? How do they learn classism? How do they learn these isms? And the truth is that those behaviors have been reinforced at some point, you know, by either, you know, family or friends or the community that they live in. And, you know, the way that we can kind of combat it, and it sounds really overly simplistic, and it probably is that we need to start teaching new behaviors. And everybody does. And we need to place those old behaviors on extinction, or if they're resistant to extinction, which, you know, intermittently reinforced behaviors tend to be more resistant to extinction, we may have to, you know, punish some of those behaviors. But we do have to teach replacement responses if we're going to do that. So what is superstitious behavior? Well, superstitious behavior are, the best way to put it is they're coincidences that were reinforced, and probably a couple of times. So if you wore those socks, right, you wore a certain pair of socks, and your team won. Okay, we got one reinforced response. I wore those socks again, and they won. I didn't wear those socks, and they lost. Now we have lucky socks. That's how superstitious behavior occurs. Is that it's reinforced. Is it harder to teach old people? This question came up and I kind of love it. Is it harder to teach old people? Older people have longer learning histories, which tends to solidify their repertoires, and their behavior is more likely to have been intermittently reinforced than those who are younger. Does that make it impossible to teach old people? Absolutely not. You know, we can all learn new things throughout our lives. But for, you know, people whose behavior has been reinforced and has a long learning history, sometimes that change is a little bit more slow. It's a little bit harder to break some of those response reinforcer relationships. So, yes, old people can, you know, like me, can learn new things, but it may take a little bit more work. And then PBIS. So some people were, you know, I'm sure, so PBIS, for those of you who have not contacted it, PBIS is positive behavior support in schools. So it's a system of reinforcement for appropriate behavior that's often used in schools. And PBIS is used, you know, across a lot of different places and things and all kinds of stuff. So what makes PBIS go wrong sometimes? What can make PBIS go wrong is when it's not used based upon the principles of reinforcement. So I wouldn't say that PBIS doesn't work. I don't think that's fair to PBIS. I think what happens is that it's being used by people who are not familiar with behavioral principles and how reinforcement and punishment and extinction, all that stuff works together. So sometimes you'll see things where it's kind of a carrot and stick, where, you know, do you want this? Well, you're going to have to do this. And it's offered in a more coercive type of manner. Or you'll see, if you keep doing that, I'll take a ticket away. Well, we know that's response cost. And we also know that that results in other types of responses, right? And then, you know, how should we be doing this? Well, we should be giving the tickets out contingent upon the appropriate response. We should be fading those tickets out as kids get older, right? In a richer schedule of reinforcement, then fading to a more intermittent schedule so that the natural contingencies start to take over. But a lot of that stuff wasn't really built into the earlier versions of PBIS. I think they are now, but they weren't back then. So the issue is that what makes PBIS go wrong is that it's not the system, it's the way that people are using it. And, you know, if you have a BCBA at the helm of PBIS, I think it goes a lot better. So that's very important. Okay, and my last thing that I want to talk about, because I know some of you are people of faith, you know, and maybe you're Christian, maybe you're Jewish, maybe you're Muslim, maybe you're Buddhist, and then I have people here who are not of faith. So what comes up is how operant learning affects how we view religion. Okay, so typically most major religions talk about free will. And they talk about the fact that we have the freedom to choose. In a determined type of paradigm, which is what behaviorism is, we do not have free will. We do not have freedom to choose. So what Skinner says religion is that it's a set of contingencies that are set up to guide societal behavior. So it will come as no surprise to you that Skinner was an atheist. But does that mean that I'm saying that if you want to become a behavior analyst, you have to give up your religion. No, 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 no. Okay? I would never, ever tell you that. What I will say is that you need to be able to explain Skinner's view to be a behavior analyst. If you can't do that, that's a problem. Okay? So you need to be able to explain Skinner's view, but that doesn't mean you have to buy into it all. But I really want you to be able to talk about it and understand it. But also know that I am not in the business of taking away people's faith. So that's my... Every semester I have the same discussion, and every semester I make sure that I have that caveat out. All right, and someone asks if I have any suggestions on how to remember all the terms. A couple of ways. First way would be to make sure that you're practicing every day. Okay, so taking 5 minutes out to study your vocabulary every day. That's going to make a world of difference. The second thing is to look for behavioral principles in your life. So look at, you know, why my husband decided to chop onions while I was making my video. You know, why does my dog bark at all the other dogs in the neighborhood? Really look and see, and don't confine it to students with autism or students with disabilities. Really look around, like look at the checker and start, you know, look with curiosity and say, what's, you know, maintaining, you know, her response? Or, you know, you're at the gym and, you know, you see one person who is going, you know, all out and another one that's, you know, going really slow. And what contingencies are maintaining that? You know, how do complex schedules of reinforcement, how are they working in my world? And so that's the second way. And the third is to be really strict when you talk behaviorism. Obviously, out in the real world is not the place to do that. This is more of the place to practice that. But really practice talking like a behavior analyst. You know, avoid explanatory fictions. Make sure that you're talking in behavioral terms. Make sure that you're not reinforcing people. Make sure you're not saying the reinforcements. Practice that. And when you practice it, it's just like learning any other language. The more you practice, the more you talk to other people who are within that community, the more fluent you'll become. All right, so thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon.